and Nothing's Real, right here on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM Digital throughout Perth and the metropolitan area. How are you today? Yes, today we have Health Matters, and we have three lovely guests in the studio here to talk about Health Matters. And health really does matter when it comes to your health and your well-being. And Mel Robinson, welcome to the radio.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And of course, this has been a first time here at Noongar Radio. Yeah. And again, let's tell us a little bit about you and your history. And Mel, who are you?
Okay.
And your family.
Okay. I'm actually a Kimberley girl. I was born in Derby many moons ago. And I grew up in Narinyan country, so hello to my mob out there. I'm visiting this country, so, you know, I'd like to pay my respects to the traditional owners of the Noongar Boodja. I've sort of done a very colourful journey into health. I'm a registered nurse. I work in Aboriginal health policy at the moment. So I'm down here while my daughter goes to school, and she, special shout out to her, because she's like, don't talk about me today, you know. But, I've got a big family up there, lots of connections up there still I maintain, and I try and go visit and stuff, yeah.
And Mel Robinson, why did you take health up?
I think because I really want to look after people, and, you know, Aboriginal and non, but particularly my people. So a lot of people in my family have died, you know, young and from preventable diseases. So I really wanted to make a difference and, you know, be able to improve health for our people, especially my people up north, but, you know, all Aboriginal people across Australia as well.
Yeah. And, of course, Karen, I'm looking at your name. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And you're Karen McMenamin.
That's almost right. Got it.
I got it before.
You did.
Yeah. And tell us about your role and what you do.
So, Jeremy, I work for East Metropolitan Health Services as the Executive Director, Clinical Planning and Population Health. And I am responsible for the Aboriginal strategy setting for East Metro, as well as the delivery of Aboriginal programs across the metropolitan area of Perth. Quite a busy role and a very, very rewarding role as well.
And again, what sort of attracted you to health?
So I'm a nurse by trade, as I say. I wanted to be a nurse right from my very younger years. I always thought I'd work with children and parents, but in fact I never actually did that. I went and worked in hospitals for a long time and made my journey to this particular role. I've led a fairly colourful journey across my career, but I'm really pleased to be in this role, which I've worked in for now 12 months, and it's very exciting. There's lots of opportunity and there's lots of work to be done.
Yeah, yeah. And welcome along, Denise Gillen. How are you?
Good, thanks, Jeremy. Yeah, Griffin.
Griffin, that's right. How are you today?
I'm good.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about you.
I'm a Kimberley girl as well.
Yeah.
I was born in Derby, but my grandmother, maternal grandmother, was Nyigana. Walmajari and then Jaru from East Kimberley, Palm Springs area. So across the Kimberley really. So lived most of my life there, lived in the Pilbara and but I've been here in Noongar country since 2003 and it's always been, I guess, the place to come for all of our families from all over the state, I think,
Yeah, and of course there's been a great attraction to do what you're doing. What is that? What sort of motivated you to do that?
I guess because, health has always been, you know, big in our families and community. And I had an opportunity actually when I was 19 to go into community health. And so my first job was working in health, and I would work with the nurses. We'd go out to the communities and we'd provide care out to the people in the communities that couldn't make it into town. And so I started off in health, and then I've worked in Aboriginal education, justice area, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women areas, and then I've come back into health. So I think it's just gone around a big circle for me.
Yeah. And today we're looking at, of course, health in a different light. It's all about policy planning. It's about a structural process, which is an important process when it comes to health. And of course, who shall we talk to first about that, regarding that?
I think probably start with me, Jeremy.
Yes, you can. Yes,
Mel.
Mel? No worries. Now tell us about a little bit more about the structural process of health, because it is an important subject.
Yes, of course. I think, like lots of agencies across the state, health's really keen to get more Aboriginal people into employment. We know that if people have jobs, you know, obviously it improves their health, it improves their finances, it improves their family life. So it's a real key way to sort of improve people's health. So we're looking at a number of things that we can do to kind of support that. And I guess we already run a range of things across health, including supporting the universities, graduate programs. We've talked on your show before about cadetship
programs, and stuff.
So we're doing a number of things that are sort of creating those pathways into employment and into increasing the number of Aboriginal people working in health. Because we know if you come into a hospital and you're a bit unfamiliar and scared, if you see an Aboriginal person somewhere on that journey, it actually helps you to engage better and to follow the treatment and hopefully get a good result from that. So, you know, how can we get more people into the system so we can reflect better our community and our community's needs? So I guess employment's really important, and one of the things we're talking about today is the Section 51 pilot that we're doing across the system.
Yeah, who would like to elaborate on that? That's a good topic to talk about. Yes.
Yes, sure. It's Denise. With the Section 51, there's been a commitment by the organisation, and I guess that the Section 51, we're using that really to attract and appoint more Aboriginal people.
Yeah.
So it's a way of getting more Aboriginal people into the system. So, and that's into the mainstream positions. So the mainstream positions that are advertised apply that section, and then we look at appointing Aboriginal people. So as Mel said, it is fairly important that the more Aboriginal people we have, then, as we know, Aboriginal people will then come to the service.
Yeah.
So,
and of course, it is that process of, I suppose, seeing other people in the industry also, and I mean that's an important process to see our own families that are in there that can also give that advice to people that are in hospitals and are in care.
Yeah, for sure. You know, those who are there in care, and those staff that are providing the care to our people as well. You know,
so it's two way. It's a double edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah.
Working with two people, communities. Yeah.
Yep.
And Jeremy, I think it's important to note that this Section 51 applies a little bit differently to targeted Aboriginal opportunities across health. So some positions are advertised as Section 50D, which means only Aboriginal people can apply. But the Section 51 allows any Aboriginal person to apply for any position. So this applies to every single position that anybody in the community sees up on the jobs board.
Yeah, and from this, how do you I suppose attracting the people to the jobs, the types of work that you're going to that they're embarking on, the right particular person.
Yeah, exactly, and that's, you know, always been a challenge because, we're competing with lots of other agencies around employing Aboriginal people, so how do we make health somewhere that people actually want to come and work, you know, like an employer of choice, I guess, to use a slogan. You know, how do we make people want to come and work with us? And I think some of that is about getting our existing workers out in the community, like this show even, and just telling people our story. You know, we've all come through this system and got jobs and things, and we're role models for our community,
so
you know, it's really important to tell those stories.
We're basically, again, Denise, we're like story boards, aren't we, to our community? Because they'll say to you, "How are you, Denise?" And there's the family members, the Yarru mob, or another particular group that's there. And that is another process of, you know, putting that message out there in the community so that it sort of breaks down those barriers where those mainstream systems are there. But having Aboriginal people there, it just opens up a different paradigm.
It does. It definitely does. So, you know, like for myself, while I've come through and I've applied for positions, 50D positions, but, you know, what's been coming out of our conversations in community is about seeing Aboriginal people in all the other positions right across the hospital. So in hospitality, in catering, in clinical positions, in non-clinical positions. So we really want to open up that opportunity and say, look, it's not just in particular areas that you're going to get the position. And there's support as well. So in I'm leading the Aboriginal Health Strategy team, and we've got workforce strategies. So,
yeah.
You know, we've got some things that we want to do that's going to encourage Aboriginal people to want to come and work with us, but give them the information that they need and support as well.
And how have you been doing that, at, sort of encouraging Aboriginal people to get into the workplace? And as I said, it's not just hospitals, but it's general. It's right across the board. It's not only working in a medical field. It could be in maybe a shop front or doing things that's there that's we don't sort of put two together or tweak together.
Yeah. One of the things we're doing is we've formed an Aboriginal Workforce Engagement Group.
Mm.
So that's all the Aboriginal people who are working in East Metro have the option of actually joining our group. And so, you know, we want to, they want to promote as well what they're doing through that process as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing we were just talking about, I mean, Denise, the moment you said Yarru, that's my mother's country.
Oh.
From Broome, the Yarru country.
Oh, okay. No, sorry. I'm Jaru.
Jaru.
Not
oh, Jaru.
Yarru. Yeah.
I think my grandfather is from that way, from the Mulgam, yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah.
But again, we're talking about this whole process of, you know, because there are people that are coming from the north of the state, and patients are coming right across to go for treatment, and then when you know that there's someone who understands you, again it opens up that different paradigm. It opens up that engagement, I must say.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things that we're doing as well, like working with, say, South Metro, North Metro, WAX as well, and trying to, and we're working together to actually increase the cultural understanding for the people who are providing the clinical care as well,
yeah.
So that they actually have a better understanding as well. So it's not just Aboriginal people who are there for our people, but it's the clinicians as well. If they have a greater understanding of where people are coming from and the diversity and the different cultures and different things, then they're actually better, you know, able to provide a better care, because they're coming from a place of understanding and knowing that this patient of theirs is not just one person, but it's part of a family and part of a community, and there's lots of things that might be happening. So getting a real good understanding of that, and then they're able to, I guess, provide the best care that they can.
Yeah. We'll just go for a quick break, and we'll just go for a song, and then we'll just get to our points, and it should be good right here on Noongar Radio. So just stay with me right here on Noongar Radio, and just to let you know that we're broadcasting not only here in Perth, we're broadcasting right around Australia as well.
Hello, this is Israel, and you are listening to 100.9 FM Noongar Radio.
Don't you
to Noongar Radio 100.9 FM Digital, broadcasting throughout Perth in the metropolitan area. It's a great day today, and nice to be with you, and nice to have, and of course, our audience participation. People can get in contact with Noongar Radio, and just to remind our listeners, that number is 0448 21186. That's our input line, and that's more of input, and we'd like to know what we're doing that is good for you as well, and we'd like to hear from you as well, right here on Noongar Radio. This is Health Matters, and three lovely guests here in the studio to talk to us about health matters, and again, it's sort of looking behind the scenes of health, and tell us a little bit about some of the jobs that people can get when it comes to health jobs. And let's start first. The types of jobs that people can apply for, and it varies too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And look, Jeremy, I think a lot of people think health is doctors and nurses, which, you know, no disrespect to my colleagues, it is. A lot of our workers are, but there's a lot of other roles in health outside of that as well. And I'm thinking about some of the allied health professionals that we have, like social workers, occupational therapists, speech therapists, dietetics, like nutrition people. So there's lots of different roles with degrees, like university degrees, but there's also, we have a lot of support roles that don't require any sort of qualification or training. And I'm thinking about some of the patient care assistants, orderlies, you know, some of those non-kind of clinical hands-on sort of roles, but are still in the background doing really important work, you know, cleaning, catering, those sorts of things, you know. So there's a variety of roles in health. Some need degrees, but some don't. Some people can walk off the street and get a job with us, you know, and it's really important to tell that message to people, yeah.
And Mel Robinson I'm speaking with, and this is Health Matters on Noongar Radio, 100.9 FM, broadcasting digitally around Perth and the metropolitan area, and as I mentioned, right across Australia as well. So it's really nice to be on the program. What are you doing about sort of putting that message across to the community? How are we doing that?
Yeah, so recently we developed a booklet for, yeah. We're targeting our youth really, so anyone sort of, I guess, 12 to 25, to really profile that we are more than nurses and doctors. So in that booklet we've got a range of different career pathways, talks about the entry level, you know, where you can come in with no qualification, talks about some of the vocational training, you know, like Marmaduke training, do some of those courses for health workers and stuff, and enrolled nursing and other kind of degrees and things, and then talks about some of the university pathways, and we've put some photos of some of our Aboriginal people who have, you know, successfully gone through those pathways and now are employed in health. So I think it's really important to get those out in the community. So we're getting those out to the schools, we're going to the career expos, we're at Ashfield doing the Deadly Jobs Expo this year. Yeah. So really just getting out in the community and saying, we've got all these opportunities, there's not enough of us to look after all our people coming into the system. You know, we do need to partner with our non-Aboriginal staff as well, because they make up our majority. They also can support our people, but also we need more of our people in the system.
Yeah, and Mel, with you, how important it is when you're drawing from your own experience as a nurse?
Yeah.
What's the importance there?
Look, I think it's really important for our kids to, you know, believe in themselves. You know, there's a lot of mixed messages going on in communities, and how do we get kids onto a better pathway? And I know myself, I struggled, you know, being a country kid. I went to a boarding school and then coming to university, and I was actually the only Aboriginal student in my class of 160 at Curtin, and that was a real struggle for me culturally. So, you know, it's about keeping your strength as you're navigating that system. But I also draw from that, I want kids and our community to have as many opportunities and know about the opportunities. And sometimes it's so complicated working out, you know, how do I get in, who do I talk to. So for me, a lot of what I do is wanting to educate everyone about what's available, you know, what there is out there, and what you can do if you want to do it, you know.
Yeah, and Karen, the pathways, there's quite a few pathways to go.
There are many pathways, Jeremy, and I think we talk a lot in health about hospitals, but health actually spans lots of different areas. So we have people that work in schools but actually work in health roles. We have people that work in private practices, in mental health clinics, in rehabilitation centres, in day therapy centres. And I think it's really important that the community understands that roles in health are varied. They can be from administrative positions right up to clinical people, so your doctors and your nurses, as Mel has said. But each of those roles adds a certain depth and diversity to our workforce, which is really important to deliver good, safe, healthy care to our community.
Yeah. And of course, that you've touched on a beautiful topic, and it comes back to diversity. And, Denise, diversity is important. It's a two-way education, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Diversity in the workforce.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
Because you've got something to give from a different perspective.
That's right, yeah. And I think we're all part of that maze, if you like, about providing that care. So along that journey of care that's provided, there's people that are stepping in and stepping out, and there's also the liaison officers. So they're in most of the hospitals as well. They're usually the first point of contact for our people, and then the care is then handed over to somebody else, but it's continuity of care and it's patient-centred care as well.
Yeah. There seems to be a vested interest when it comes to not saying that this is in mainstream systems, but there is a vested interest when there's a family person involved, or a family that's been involved, or a person from a different clan group or whatever. There's a difference when it comes to that care. It sort of lightens people up in a way, and that's what I'm talking about, is that diversity.
Would
you agree?
Yeah,
definitely. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important to also let people know that we do have other jobs that we do that aren't necessarily with patients and families. So, you know, some of that behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, human resources, business type qualifications, you know, we have lawyers in health, you know, we have policy people in health who do really good work, and, you know, I'm a policy person, so I think it's really important for people to know that we're not just, you know, because if you don't like blood and, you know, sickness and stuff, there is other jobs you can do that aren't necessarily in that call face, but that are still really important, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. And on the subject of policy, Mel, your specific role is a policy person who looks at policy in detail and cultural processes as well, isn't it?
Yeah. So I work in the Department of Health, and all our roles in health have sort of changed, and we're quite a big entity. We have 44,000 people working in health, and Aboriginal people only make 1.1% of that. So we're a tiny piece of the puzzle, and that's why I guess we need our non-Aboriginal people to be on our page and stuff. But to be able to grow that and into these different spaces, we need policy work, which is kind of what I do around the pilot for Section 51 of the Equal Opportunity Act. That's part of that role, is working out how you can use policy to influence across a system and really, you know, make a difference for the community and meet the community's needs. You know, so to grow our workforce from that 1.1 to a 3.2%, and it's, I know people go, it's just a number, but when you think about 44,000 people, that's, you know, over nearly 15,000 Aboriginal people need to come into our system. At the moment, we're about 600.
So that's an example of what policy can do.
Yeah.
And Karen?
I think it is really important to get the Aboriginal community into our health services, and I think, you know, we talk about ways that we can get the message out there, but I think it's really important that our community understands the way that they can apply for these jobs, the way that they can get a foot in the door, and there is lots of opportunities there. Obviously, you know, the web is a huge mechanism for advertising jobs, but there's also opportunities by word of mouth, and certainly we're looking at opportunities going forward around volunteering in our hospitals. And if there is anyone in the community out there that would like to really, you know, help with volunteering as well, I think they're very good opportunities as well.
And what are the sort of example, or the I suppose in a way, you know, What's the benefits of doing that in the community for a person wanting to go to do some volunteering?
I think it's a two-way street, volunteering, actually. I think people who volunteer actually choose, they make that decision to volunteer, but I think they're actually giving something back to the health service, and I think it comes back to the patients that are coming into our health services when they see someone that they may know or where they come from, that it actually provides kind of that feeling of relief that they've got someone to help them navigate, even if it's just as simple to find which ward to go to or how to find their sick relative who's coming via the emergency department. So I think those kinds of strategies are also really important to make people feel comfortable and secure in our hospitals.
Yeah, and of course the benefits too for people going volunteering is also the benefits of sort of having your CV, putting your CV together, and that this is what I've done. This
exactly.
is my experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And and of course you know, I suppose selling the process, because it is a very specific type of employment. You're dealing with people, and people with situations that have gone through pretty sad moments in that time, and their sickness, and they need that support as well. So you're becoming a carer as well.
Yep. And I think the volunteer person herself brings a whole range of experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, and may have already gone through the system and gone through, you know, something major in their life or minor, you know. So they have that understanding already. And there's also people who might have already, you know, been working in government as well, and so they can actually influence, and they can actually help us identify where those gaps and what do we do when we actually come across those gaps as well. So it is a two-way thing, and that's what we, you know, are encouraging community to do, is to come in and be there, and you know the system, and you also know what the health issues are as well, and how you get through that system. I actually met a friend yesterday who's now a volunteer, and she worked in the system, and it was so good to see her. And she said, finally, I can give back to the health system, and she looked happy as well. Not that we're not happy working in the government, but you know, she was just really happy to be able to give that back.
And as I say, it's a two-way exercise we're talking about here, and it's such a beautiful job when you're working in health, because you're helping people, and not only that, you know, there's great assistance that can be given in sort of times of need as well, and then it's the extended family groups, the families that mean so much, and of course it is probably an added process to the placebo effect, no doubt, you know, having people coming together. Okay, now what if someone's listening into the program right now and they say, look, I'd like to go and get into a position, I want to be an orderly, or I want to be you can be a cleaner, you can be a chef, and there are various sections in the hospitals, what would you encourage them to do?
I guess from our strategy team, we've got a number of people in my team. Yeah. We've got a workforce consultant, so if somebody actually wants to come in, they can give me a call and we can talk to them, and we can actually help to try to identify if there's any vacancies and to provide support as well. So that's what we do as well. So people can just come to our office to see us and have a yarn about what they're looking for.
Yeah. And is there a notice? There is a notice board at every hospital, isn't that, where there is specific positions? Yeah. Royal Perth has got one on the main floor where people can have a look at the board. I think it's all more internal rather than anything else. Was a process as well, too. Yeah.
Look, nowadays we use a lot of online, like everyone. Right. So we've got a pretty good relationship with the Aboriginal Workforce Development Centres,
and they have
a metro and regional offices. So they will actually know when a lot of jobs are going up, particularly with 50D and Section 51 jobs. Now we've linked our systems to theirs, so they've got an Aboriginal Jobs Board, and I would encourage people to go have a look there, because that's got, you know, all the current jobs across all the agencies, including health as well. And also we have a website which I'll read out to your listeners, which is our health website, which is health.wa.gov.au. So on that website, you can look up careers, and it also links you to our health jobs board as well. Sometimes that's a bit tricky for our people because you've got to search, but if you just click on health and click search, it'll find all the jobs that are going at the moment. So, but yeah, if you're stuck and you want that face-to-face, definitely contact the services themselves or go to the workforce development people because they're really helpful.
And of course the grapevine.
Yes, yes.
It's the Aboriginal grapevine.
Yes,
yep. We call it the Blackfellow Brook grapevine, which goes out in the community. Mm-hmm. And that's where, I suppose that's where liaison officers sort of fit in when it comes to that, or even yourselves, knowing that families are listening in as well. Go, okay, no worries, the grapevine. Yep. How important is that?
Well, that's actually very important, and that's probably one of the ways that we actually connect with our community and people in the community. We actually talk to people, so we actually and pass on information, and so we're always talking with each other within our service. Then we're also talking when we go out to the community and we have our meetings as well, so we're always sharing what's going on, and people are always saying, oh, do you know of a job, or you know, do you know anyone that I could speak to? So that's really, really important. That so there, and there are those online ones, and which is fantastic, and we can actually help people to actually even navigate that, to get people, just to get people started on that process as well.
Yeah, and of course, then we've got the types of sections. Like, I mean, it's pretty. I suppose what is 51 when it comes to I'm looking for a job. I'm looking at the list and I said, okay, 51. Explain that what that is.
So section 51 actually applies to everybody in the workforce.
Right.
Section 50D is the one that's specific for Aboriginal positions, so positions that require someone with Aboriginality to apply. Section 51 is how the hospitals and health services can actually go through the recruitment process. So when we're actually having a look at everybody who's applied for the positions, it's a mechanism for us to use in terms of appointing people, kind of at the back end of the process.
Yeah.
Would that be a fair call, Mel?
Yeah.
Yep. So I'll give you a good example. Last year with all the graduate nurses and midwives, you know, they're applying against, you know, we might have, say, 30, 40 coming out of uni and through the providers like Enrolled Nursings at Marmaduke and stuff. But they're applying against, you know, thousands of non-Aboriginal people, and it's pretty competitive. So, you know, and our mob have come out with a degree or a qualification and can actually do the job. But when they're competing with a bigger pool of everyone else, sometimes it gets more challenging. So it's about giving them that opportunity. So last year, 27 Aboriginal graduate nurses and midwives actually got appointed through the use of 51. So it's more of an internal process. When you apply, it's really important that you identify as Aboriginal or Torres Strait and or Torres Strait Islander, because we need to know that stuff. And then when we're putting you through the process, we're making sure that you can still do the job and you've got the qualification and everything, but we're making sure you get through to interview, because that's when interviews, when our people sell ourselves really well. And what we're finding is when they get to interview, they actually come out as one of the better applicants, and with 51 we can then appoint them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that they are competing with other people, but it's creating more opportunities, I guess.
Yeah. So because there is, as you say, it's more opportunity. And again, 50, which is again, that's that section 50D. Does that give me, say for instance, I go for a job that with 50D, what are my responsibilities there?
So you still have to go through the actual application process, yeah, which will be within the advertisement of the ad. But basically, you will need to answer one of the essential selection criteria, which will be worded such like being able to demonstrate your Aboriginality, which is you just need to describe where you've basically come from, your country and your people. So those ads actually state on the ad that it's a 50D position, so you can see it when you open up the advertisement, and then you just need to apply your family to one of the questions. So yeah.
And the 50D positions, are they varied right across the board of the in the medical area?
Yes, for sure. Like my position as director is a 50D position. Mm. There's Aboriginal health workers that are 50D positions, Aboriginal health professionals, health promotion positions as well are 50D positions. So there definitely are quite a varied number of roles with that applied.
Yeah. And if someone's listening to the program, they want to identify it, they can identify that position. They'll speak to a HR officer or an office that's involved in the recruitment. And is there are they recruited outside of the hospital or are they recruited from within?
From outside and, mm. and within. So yeah. they are generally open application processes, the 50D, which means it could be someone from outside of health applying for a position for within health.
Yeah. You're listening to Health Matters right here on Noongar Radio, 100.9 FM, broadcasting around Perth and the metropolitan area, and right across Australia. So we'll just go to a musical break, and we'll pick up some really interesting points. To Noongar Radio, 100.9 FM. This is Health Matters, and as I mentioned before, it's broadcasting around Perth in the metropolitan area and right across Australia as well. But and of course, our fine audience can participate from time to time, and you can send us a text. This is the SMS line. It's not a line that you talk on. All you have to do is text 0448 821 86. That number again is 0448 821 86. To say hello, you can. And Mel Robinson, thanks for coming in the studio as well. And of course, Karen, thank you as well. And I'll say that name again. Karen McMenamin?
That's right.
How's that?
Well done.
Yeah, no worries. Do I get a star for that?
You do. You get two, I think, gold ones as well.
And Denise Griffin, thank you. Thank you all for coming in the studio. I'm not saying goodbye to you, but because we're going to look at how has the health system provided the key support to some of these initiatives and policies and programs. Mel, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so I think what's been amazing is the support from the top down. So definitely from the Minister of Health and Mental Health, the Honourable Roger Cook. He's a real champion. To our Director General for Health, to all the chief executives and all the senior staff across health have been real champions and really on board about, you know, how important it is for our health to get more Aboriginal people working in health. And also, you know, just meeting the needs of the community. You know, we're only a little population, but we do have a lot of big health issues that need to be addressed. And, you know, and the only way to do that, I guess, is to get more of us into the system.
Yeah, because there's a greater conversation, and that conversation needs to be heard, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And Denise? You would naturally would agree with that.
I mean, but
you know, when you think of that, because it is a conversation that we're having here, is the same conversation that you're having at work, or talking about a policy, talking about a process.
Yeah, for sure. And myself and Sue Flindell, who's our workforce consultant, we had the opportunity to go and have that conversation with our executive as well, to talk about Section 51 and how we were going to implement it as well. So, you know, it has really had good buy-in right across. And one of the other things we're looking at doing is raising that awareness amongst our managers and those who are involved in employing people as well, and getting them on board as well, so that we actually can go on that journey and that process, so we can make sure that we do achieve what we're trying to achieve, and that's to increase the workforce. One of the other important things that's part of this whole process with the Section 51 is the involvement of Aboriginal people. So there's going to be Aboriginal people on the panel, and they can be people from the community as well. So and that's going to be really, really important for us to be able to do that. And so we're also going to make sure that we assist them as well to be able to participate on the panel. We also have a working group. We're going to set up a working group with East Metro, and so we can guide and we can follow that journey and monitor it as well, because we have 12 months really to pilot it, but at the end of the day, you know, we hope that it'll continue after that.
Yeah, and of course that the importance of support and having a good support base as well, isn't it?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. For the workforce.
Yes.
Yes, yes. And as I mentioned before, our Aboriginal Workforce Engagement Group, you know, that's a forum where those who are already employed and those who are coming into the East Metro can come and join our group, or they don't have to join the group. They can actually even just talk to staff as well that are working within this hospital and within our team as well. So there's ongoing support there. There's support that's going to be provided through some processes, the induction, when they actually start in the induction process, they actually you have an understanding straight away that there is support and they're not going to be alone on that journey and working in a system, because we all know what that's like, is to be, you know, working as one Aboriginal person working in an organisation. So definitely the support will be there.
Yeah, you're sounding like a leader. With leadership. Everyone's sounding like leadership here, because I think it's important, because we're talking about a conversation that needs to be had, and we are part of the conversation. And then, of course, the conversation, which you were just saying, that the conversation is, Denise, is basically with the community, and also outside of the community, outside of the hospital systems as well. That's the bigger conversation that's happening as well. You would agree?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think, you know, there is a lot of support out there. So, you know, I don't want people to be scared off, you know, when we say we're 44,000 people. I know that's a lot of people, but as a community, the Aboriginal workers are a really strong collective and they really do look after each other. And we do have a lot of non-Aboriginal champions, I call them, because they're really on the same page as us. You know, they want to help us. They want to help our community. So, you know, they're really important as well to helping us, you know, get people in, but also keep people working and engaged and wanting to be, you know, doing their jobs and wanting to help and, you know, but also looking after ourselves as well is really important.
So. Yeah, yeah. And, of course, being Aboriginal, I gather this is what happens to us all. Our shop front is open 24/7 because there's going to be a family member that has some health issues. Yeah, the importance of you know, sometimes it's good to get away from things, but at the same time, being an Aboriginal person, someone's going to ask you some particular question, and but then again, this is what we do as Aboriginal people.
Yeah, for sure.
We're in a community like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know the connection we have with our community is through our community advisory groups.
Yeah.
And you know they know that they can contact us anytime, or we contact them. And that might be through a phone contact, or we might catch up and meet with them to talk about things. And you know, one of the things that that is a priority for them is our strategies around our workforce. So the Section 51. So our groups know all about that. So we've talked to them about that. We've had their feedback about that. So they know that it's an open door. And at any time, and even with Karen, so Karen comes to our meetings as well. So, yeah, we're available, really, outside of hours as well.
Yeah. And one of the things I'd like to ask, I suppose the most important thing, is the fact that, is there any, like, how do people want to get involved with, to be a support team out there in the community, from the community? Is sort of an application that people apply for?
To be on our community groups?
Yeah, yeah.
Look, if anyone is interested in being on our community groups, definitely they can come and contact us, and I can give my number out as well, and just to show an interest, because we have a number of groups, and they're in the Armidale area, the Bentley area, the Midland Swan Hills area, and the inner city Royal Perth. So, and obviously they're just the names of those areas, and they cover a whole, you know, area as well. So, yeah, definitely if anyone is interested, we're happy to hear from them.
This has been a really great conversation, a beautiful conversation here, in fact, because of the fact that it is about health. Is there anything that we need to sort of cover, just because we've only got a couple of minutes to go? It's just gone so quick. So let's look at some of the. Let's do a little review on what we've touched on, Karen.
So Jeremy, I think we've talked a lot about Section 51, and we've talked a lot about how we can get people into the workforce, which is really, really important. But I think it's also really important that the community understands that once they're part of our workforce, they're contributing enormously to our community as a health service, as a hospital, and then the broader community of Perth. And I think it's important that people understand that they are then contributing to enjoying work and coming to work and participating in activities that they may not have ever thought they would do or be part of, and they could be culturally appropriate activities such as the recent NAIDOC events. And such events like that were actually organised not by people at the top, but by people on the ground who knew what the community wanted. And I think it's really important that people see that there is a process. There is a process that has to happen. But once you have gone through that process and you've had the help by Mel's team or Denise's team, that we are all actually going to work together. So I think that's really important.
Yeah. Mel?
One final message from me is, I mean, today we've shone a spotlight on East Metro Health, but we do have a range of other services doing similar programs as well. So, you know, don't think because you're not in East that you can't look at other spaces. There is lots of other spaces. And on the job adverts, there is a statement around whether it's a 50D or a 51. So just for people to keep an eye out for that. And, you know, Aboriginal Workforce Development Centre know what we're doing. So, you know, if people do want to contact and get support with jobs, then go through those guys as well.
And Denise.
Yeah. I guess that I just probably wanted to finish off with saying that, you know, what we're doing and what we're doing with the community around our workforce strategies is really to break down some of those barriers so Aboriginal people will want to come to our service, not just to work, but people who are working there will attract families and communities as well. So we want to do that, and you know, we all know that the more diverse workforce we have, then that really will reflect the people that are living in our community.
Well, thank our listeners for joining Health Matters right here at Noongar Radio, and it was a lovely conversation. Mel Robinson, thank you for coming into the studio.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And Karen McMenamin.
Well done. Thanks, Jeremy.
And Denise Griffith, lovely to have you on the program too.
Thank you.